Good morning. Is this the best spot? I might have to move around a bit to see a few of you. So my name's Claire, as Steph mentioned, and I live in Thailand and work for a Christian aid and development organization, but I used to live here. This was home. And Doug and I, when we were in our 20s, we used to attend this church. And, you know, every couple of years we come by and we visit in person, but we feel very much a part of this church family. And so we're really thankful for all of you. We know you pray for us. We know that so many of you support us financially. We know that you encourage us and you cheer us on. Some of you are the most faithful emailers every time we send out an update to cheer us on. And we're just thankful for you. So thank you. Thank you for being who you are. And thank you for the love that you show us. Thinking about what else I could thank you for this morning, and I want to thank you for Andrew and Jackie. And Andrew and Jackie have been with us in Chiang Mai for the last, I want to say, 3 months. Right now, they're in our house. They are driving our car. So I don't know that they miss us too much because they've got a few comforts. They're a really excellent couple, and we really enjoy having them around. And one of the things we really appreciate about them the most is that they've brought this fresh perspective. And so there's things that we've been looking at for a decade almost now that they keep on pointing out about. They said, what's that? And their fresh eyes on our work have just, and what they've been highlighting have really just helped us to think about things in a different way. So thank you for sending them. Thank you for lending them to us. We think they might like us a little bit. They're letting us have their daughter. And we're also getting the sign on a little bit longer, a little bit longer. And each time we talk to them, they're like, oh, we might stay a few more weeks or another month. And so we're really pleased to have them. So thank you for lending us them. I've got to be honest, when I start getting into stuff, I feel quite privileged to be here, but I'm scared. And I'm stretched more than a little bit out of my comfort zone, and so I'm by no means a theologian. I'm not a pastor. And speaking to a crowd is definitely not my passion. If you give me a spreadsheet or a project to manage, I am in my happy place. I'm also a wife and a mum, and I work part-time. I take my kids to school. I organise play dates. I cook dinner. I drive the carpool. My everyday schedule in my life usually isn't so different from what other mums in New Zealand might experience. But today, I'd like to show you and share with you a little bit about how God has shaped our perspective of the world over the past year or so. If I'm honest, when I say our life isn't so different, I probably should have said, as we often do say in Thailand, same, same, but different. And sometimes it's very, very different. This morning, I've been asked to share about our work with the theme of a new perspective as part of the Prayer and Self-Denial Month. So that's the theme I'm going to hopefully come back to. So whether it's starting to learn about new things and gradually changing your view on something, or when God radically shifts your focus and your passions, life is full of opportunities to see the world differently. And that all affects your perspective and the way that you look at the world. In our life, God's done that a number of times. So today I'm just going to share that two things and one simple goal, to give you a fresh perspective, to remind us all that God is alive. He's working in some of the hardest situations you could possibly imagine in our world, but that hope and light can be found in a miserable darkness, and you can be part of that hope. So I don't have a lot of Bible verses to fill up all the words I'm going to say this morning. I'm going to tell you stories, and that's what Jesus did, so I'm okay with that. But one of my favourite verses, and a verse that one of our team members says over and over and over again, is Psalm 27, verse 13. And I'll say it twice. I would have been without hope if I had not believed that I would see the loving kindness of the Lord in the land of the living. I would have been without hope if I had not believed that I would see the loving kindness of the Lord in the land of the living. So about 10 years ago, I went on holiday. It's a good thing to do. I went on vacation with some close friends, and as part of that holiday, just a little part, we went and visited the team at Partners for about a week, and we taught some English in a refugee camp. And we found ourselves in the aftermath of a large-scale humanitarian disaster. A large cyclone had just devastated the countries nearby, and the Partners team were already responding to it. 130,000, that's a really big number. It's an even bigger number when you think about that being people. That's the number of people that died after Cyclone Nargis slammed into Myanmar in 2008, 3 weeks before we went on holiday. In those 3 weeks, people had walked from Myanmar, from the area where the storm hit, all the way to the refugee camps where we were speaking and we were teaching English. The number of people who died in that tragedy was horrifically increased because the government there intentionally blocked aid to the people who lived there. Now that's awful. But on that trip, we met some humble, faithful people that were truly living out being Jesus to these people. Despite it being difficult, they chose discomfort. Despite it being difficult, they chose distance from family and the ones they love. Despite it being difficult, they chose an all-encompassing passion to show God's love to the victims of this complex war, and at that time, a horrific natural disaster. That's the awful. But it was this new perspective for us, this up-close exposure to a phenomenal example from the Partners team of how hope and possibility of shining God's light and love into this context radically changed our worldview. It came before us selling pretty much everything we have, raising funds, and 6 months later taking 2 suitcases to Thailand. God's new perspective of the value of these people and our potential to make a tangible difference changed the full trajectory of our lives. I often call myself a corporate refugee because I had quite a different change of career. War and oppression also aren't anything new to the people of Myanmar. This country's had decades of unrest, even when this has continued through a transition to a nominally democratic government, and the country's still controlled by the military behind the scenes. This world is our normal. This world is what's different for us. This is the world that God has called Doug and I into, and is the world that continues to stretch us and grow us to live beyond ourselves for Him. Now that was the first major change of perspective for us. The next one happened in August 25 last year. Now, I don't know how much it was on the media here, but we were sitting in our lounge with a whole bunch of Partners leaders having a meeting, and the news started to roll in from our contacts in Myanmar, in Bangladesh, and on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, that a massive wave of violence and abuse had been perpetrated against the predominantly Muslim Rohingya people. This was the start of a massive wave of displacement, one of the biggest in the whole world last year. Men, women, children from the west of Myanmar crossed the border into Bangladesh. Now, because kids are here, I'm not going to go into all the details of what happened to them, but a lot of people died and a lot of really horrible stuff happened. And we've been working with the Rohingya for about 5 years now, maybe 5.5. They're an almost entirely Muslim people group of roughly 1 million. They're considered the world's largest stateless people group and are desperately unwanted, despised by others in Myanmar, where they're from, as well as those in Bangladesh where they fled. On August 29, just 3 days later, Doug and one of our colleagues were in Bangladesh, standing on the bank of a river called the Naaf River. And that river forms the border between Myanmar to the west and Bangladesh. So sort of squeezed in between India and Thailand. Okay. That border, from that vantage point, Doug sent me a photo. It was a photo of smoke. It was the photo of Rohingya villages burning just a few kilometres from where he stood across an international border. The first trickle of people had started to arrive, a few thousand across the border, but in the weeks that followed, 700,000 people crossed, many of them sharing unspeakable stories. Our team was there 3 days later, and fantastically, the global international community responded, but that was 6 weeks later, by the time that most of their systems had enabled them to move big amounts of people and big amounts of funds. So where we fitted was filling that gap in the crisis as immediate as we could. Certainly, we'd heard their stories before. They're our friends, but this was genocide, and it had reached a boiling point. What does this new perspective feel like? Absolutely horrible. And our team have been constantly on the ground delivering aid since then, and Doug and I have both travelled there as part of our efforts. And I want to show you a short clip of me in Bangladesh at the end of last year. Okay, awesome. Sorry. I won't continue because it all links in. Okay, I'll tell you a story that I was going to tell you anyway, but I'll carry on with that while the video's getting loaded. I'll tell you a story about Yasmin. And Yasmin's a woman that I met on that same trip. She shared her story with me in November. It was stifling hot. Now, just imagine the sort of hot where you step outside and you are sweating through every part of your body as soon as you step out into it. And then we went inside. And that was it was bamboo, it was tarpaulins and not much else, but it was all sealed in. There were about six of us sitting on the floor listening to her story, both Rohingya people and a few foreigners, and about another 40 tried to squeeze in the window of this small shack to hear what was going on. We knew her family were living on next to nothing. Basically, one meal a day is what most of the Rohingya camps have got providing for people who are on rations at the moment. And her family gave us a feast of food, and they welcomed us so generously. It was amazing. Now, Yasmin's story was that she was 9 months pregnant, and she told us the story that her labour pains had started already the day the soldiers came. And her whole village was forced to run. And she was in labour and abandoning her home. They walked in the heat of the day, constantly looking back to see if the soldiers were getting any closer. From far, well, not that far, they could see the smoke of their houses burning. There was no turning back. There was nothing to go back to. She delivered her baby in the jungle that night. The villagers from her town village stayed with her until the baby arrived, but she insisted that they go on. She said to them, "You know, you need to leave and get to Bangladesh. I'll stay here for a bit with the baby and recover." Nobody wanted to leave her there, but they knew she was right, and they'd heard what had been happening in the other villages nearby. She spent the night alone with her baby in the jungle, not daring to sleep as she listened for the sound of the soldiers creeping by. She was so afraid, and she said that the next day, after having had her baby, she got up and kept walking, and eventually she reached Bangladesh, and if I recall correctly, it was about 10 days later. So for any of you mums who imagine having a baby and then 10 days later, having walked for 10 days to reach somewhere safe. Now she lives in a shack in Bangladesh with 10 of her family members, and that's where I met her. And she told us about her baby, and we're like, "Well, what's his name?" Because by that stage the baby was 3 months old, and she said, "I haven't given him a name yet. I'm thinking I'll call him Problem." So I don't know what her little baby's life will hold. And he lives in this overcrowded camp in a country that doesn't want him, where there's not enough food, where there's no water, there's not enough shelter, no citizenship, no assurance of education, privacy, and only minimal health care. She didn't ask us for anything, nothing. She only said, "Please tell my story." And so that's my promise completed this morning. But she also said, "Tell them that we're here. Tell them that we're here." I do know that that baby is created in the image of God. And I will do my best to let them know that I've told people what's happening. I've met some of her family and connected to some of her family around the world. So I will tell them to tell their family this morning that people in New Zealand have heard their story. You got the video? Okay. That'll do.
Hi, I'm here with Partners Relief and Development in the Rohingya camps in Bangladesh. We've been here in the camps the last 3 days, and I'm a mum and my heart's broken. I've just seen lines and lines of mums with little tiny babies, and babies far too small for what I know a healthy baby looks like. And it's scary enough being a new mum, let alone being a new mum in a refugee camp. In a camp where there's not enough food, where medical supplies are limited, where you don't even have any support for breastfeeding or for even to know what's happening to your body. And it's wonderful to see the community health workers here, even doing things that are a little bit out of their cultural comfort zone, sharing these hygiene packs for these women, because you know that this is actually going to give them some freedom. We were looking for someone to give the hats to, and the hats are all sizes, but we had one that was really, really small, and we gave it away, but then we saw the smallest baby we'd seen all day, and she's teeny, 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 tiny baby, just 5 days old, with just already sick and already looking quite desperate. And I couldn't imagine having my baby here, and the mother can't even get out of bed. She hasn't got any milk. We gave them a Days for Girls hygiene pack, so that at least the bleeding after that she'll have some way of being taken care of a little bit. But it's pretty desperate. I honestly don't know what's going to happen to this little baby. I don't know that there's much we can do but pray, and I will, and I am, and I'm feeling a bit heartbroken. If it was me, I'd want every bit of help I could possibly get. If it was me, I'd want people to go to the ends of the earth for my babies, and it's good to see that people are, and we are amazed by the people that are mobilised around the world to share their love and to be here. It's been wonderful to have all of you with us, even though you're not here. We know that you go with us and you support us, so thank you.
So that was me getting wrecked, getting my heart absolutely torn in two. Broken to the extent where I kind of didn't know that it was possible to be broken. And that's living in this context, you know, you think you'd seen it all, but this was harder. And it's true that these people have been subjected to horrible, horrible things. Genocide, a deliberate and systematically planned attack on a people despised because they have a different faith. They're different from the ethnicity that is the majority. This is Yasmin and his son in the Bangladeshi refugee camp. That's how she held him like that as she told him the story they shared with you just before. There's a hatred here that's built on fear, propaganda, and it goes to the very heart of the military and the government. And when you hear stories like this firsthand, or even, you know, for me, I'm filtering through reports and stories from others involved in other conflict zones, you get exposed to some of the most horrible things that people can do to each other. But I've seen the worst, and I've also seen the very, very best. I've seen a Korean pastor who chose to go and live amongst the Rohingya, despite the risk of significant personal danger, to share his faith in his home with dozens of people who've come to know Jesus as their Lord and Saviour. We've then connected his new family of believers to other believers in Bangladesh, and they had to flee the violence. And so now there's a pocket of Christians in the midst of the Rohingya who are continuing to help Muslim friends and show them with practical care and support what Jesus' love looks like. I've also met and prayed for an imam, that's a Muslim leader, in Bangladesh. He leads a mosque of more than 2,000 people, and he lives in an area where Muslim against Muslim violence happens for when people aren't Muslim enough. Yet, he chooses to faithfully work alongside us, a overtly Christian development and aid organisation with believers who are obviously foreign, who could put him in significant risk, because he gets it. He knows that to love is to act. And, you know, the last time I met him in person, and I had contact with him all the time, I got to pray with him and with some other friends. And I left him with some funds and some plans to help with food for some malnourished babies, the kind of babies that they were showing in the video before. And you know what he said to me as I left? He said, please, please keep on praying for me and my family. I've also met New Zealanders, Australians, Americans, Norwegians, Canadians, Thais, people from all around the world that have knitted little hats for babies. They provided materials for feminine hygiene packs, that have faithfully prayed for and encouraged us, that have sent automatic payments that have kept Doug and I in Thailand for the last almost 10 years. It's amazing. It's hope. It's kingdom work. Over the last few days, I've also seen God put our team in a community in Syria that 7,000 people were displaced into on that very day. Our team is there now with a group of Syrian Christians who are leading some amazing efforts to not only provide food and medical care into this environment, but also to start businesses that provide employment and sleeping bags for people who have walked away from their homes with only what they could carry. No matter how dark, how horrid, how numbing and unpleasant to think about, there is hope. We serve a loving and caring God who loves all his people, all his creation. We have an opportunity to be his hands and feet. Sometimes that means taking risks and saving lives, but it's equally about intentionality in how we treat each other, especially those that need a little extra support. It's about praying for this country. It's about praying for other countries, and not shutting our eyes, because at the end of the day, it's about people, it's about hope, it's about understanding how God's heart is broken for all of us. In our shared humanity and in our shared brokenness, we have a phenomenal opportunity to be light and hope to one another for Jesus. To truly love one another is to put that love into action. For us, for Doug and I, that means going to the heart of the hurt in many situations. But it's the same for you, to sit alongside mothers, fathers, widows, orphans, children in their times of great crisis, to see them as Jesus does, and to love them as if it were ourselves, as if it were our very own children, our family. You go with us, and we cannot go there without your love, without your prayers, and without God leading us and directing our response. When we get news in the communities we work with that is hard in Southeast Asia and now in the Middle East, our team doesn't have to wonder, because there's a Bible verse for this sort of situation. Matthew 25:35, another favourite. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. Sometimes it really is that simple. And sometimes you spend the entire day calling everyone you know to see if they'll help, because feeding thousands of people for the next month just isn't in the budget. Because God put us face to face with hungry kids and thirsty mothers, we know that this is the path he wants for us. He's put us there. So we stop and we help, because to love is to act. So today, I hope you understand a little bit more about us, about our work, about God's love and the hope it can bring to these conflict zones. I hope you have a fresh perspective on your world a little, because once you know, you can't unknow. It's now all of our responsibilities, and together we can be bringers of hope. The hard stuff in our world isn't going away, and in many times it's getting worse, but there's room for Jesus, there's room for hope, and there's always something we can do.